back out in regular society and things of that nature. But me and my team, we will continue.
Well, Rakim Balogun, we want to thank you for being with us.
Push for law.
And also Maki Asiro. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
Cable Community Radio is proud co-sponsor of the Vanport Mosaic Festival, a four-day multidisciplinary event from May 23rd to May 28th in various venues in North and Northeast Portland. The Vanport Mosaic Festival includes exhibits, art performances, a reunion and celebration of former Vanport residents, oral history documentary screenings of Priced Out and Lost City, Living Memories, and tours of the historic Vanport City. Again, that's the Vanport Mosaic Festival, a four-day multidisciplinary event from May 23rd to May 28th, taking place in various venues in North and Northeast Portland. More information about the festival, including specific performances, screenings, dates, times, and venues, can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of The Fritz Waugh Show on Tuesday, May 29th at 9 p.m. at Mississippi Studios in Portland. Fritz Waugh will be headlining this show, playing songs off her latest release, the self-written and produced Avenue A. Also playing will be David Barber and Radio Phoenix, mixing hip-hop and jazz, and Trent Barspel, who mixes jazz and modern music. Again, that's The Fritz Waugh Show on Tuesday, May 29th at 9 p.m. at Mississippi Studios, 3939 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. This is a 21 and over event. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland.
And the rivers and the oceans and the streams are muddy brown, and the red and orange sunset turns to gray, and the sunlight gets dimmer as the haze falls all around, and the green and yellow hills have turned to clay. In a world without tomorrow, in a world that cannot last, in a world without tomorrow, my friend, that day is on its way. My friend, that day is coming fast. And the flowers, they are dying as the black rain takes its toll, and all the fish are turning gray and pale, and the blue and purple mountains look like a pile of coal, and the atmosphere is getting thick and stale. In a world without tomorrow, in a world that cannot last, in a world without tomorrow, my friend, that day is on its way. My friend, that day is coming fast. In a world without tomorrow, in a world that cannot last, in a world without tomorrow, my friend, that day is on its way. My friend, that day is coming fast. And the trees are dead and barren, and the grass has turned to stone, and only man has caused it all. A victim of his greed and profit, now he stands alone, waiting to be the last one to fall. In a world without tomorrow, in a world that cannot last, in a world without tomorrow, my friend, that day on its way. my friend that day, he's coming back. My friend that day is on its way. My friend that day is coming back. My friend that day is on its way. My friend that day is coming back. My friend that day is on its way. My friend that day is coming fast. My friend that day is on its way. My friend that day.
And good morning. What a happy tune with such bleak lyrics. Like late great Floyd Red Crow Westerman of the Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate tribe. We miss you, Floyd. Yeah, ironically, some of the things that he was speaking to in that song have been somewhat resolved. The, you know, most visible of the pollution, acid rain, to some extent. But I think the idea of a world without tomorrow is what I was getting at. You know, I had such a nice bike ride in today. It has that nice coolness in the early morning. Relatively early morning air. Just a delicious day today. So why am I talking doom and gloom? I guess that's just the way I am. I'm going to read from a few articles. Don't have a guest. I'd like to let you know that next week I do have a guest, and I'm making more of an effort to line up guests in advance. It's kind of a I won't get into the difficulties of doing talk radio, but anyway, Laura Finley, Associate Professor of Sociology and Criminology, will be talking, having a somewhat unique take, her own take on school shootings. She had a couple articles out on Counterpunch, one after the Parkland shooting, which is near where she is in Florida. After the Parkland shooting, teach youth about dating violence. And a much earlier one that had captured my attention, and I was thinking of having her on, but didn't reach out to her until recently, Breakups, Rejections, and School Shootings. Anyway, she's an associate professor, as I said, in sociology and criminology. She's co-author of 7 books on various social justice topics. She regularly presents at professional conferences on issues related to peace, human rights, and social justice. And she's a community activist serving with several nonprofits to provide services to victims of domestic violence and essential human rights. Her current work is focused on peace education in colleges and universities. Anyway, all this this portrait that seems to be emerging of a lot of these teens or immediately post-teens who carry out these horrific acts at either their schools or their former schools is that they've had difficulty in romantic relationships. They might have been teased or made fun of and not handled that well. Of course, as people have pointed out, lots of people suffer these slings and arrows of the teenagers without shooting up their schools. But it is important to look deeper at this, and Laura Finley is one who does, so I'd encourage you to go and check those articles out in advance of next week's show. Laura Finley on Counterpunch, one of my go-to websites. So what are we going to talk about today? Well, there's a piece out on Truth Dig by Chris Hedges called The Coming Collapse. And there's another piece out on Truth Out by Dar Jamil. This came out on Monday. The Truth Dig was from Sunday. An extreme climate forces extreme measures as worst case predictions are realized. You know, last week I talked about this idea of apocalypse that is so embedded in certain evangelical Christians' imaginations, and how that is fed into this burgeoning over the past few decades evangelical support for Israel on the basis the flawed, deeply flawed, tragically flawed basis that somehow it will hasten the second coming of Jesus Christ and save, I guess those people must somehow think that they are among those who will be saved. Anyway, it's a deep morass. But I was talking about the apocalyptic imagination, and which I think is a kind of a form of world weariness, a sort of desperation in the face of the intractable nature of the horrible system that we've been enmeshed in for really centuries, if not millennia. This power system of hierarchical, militaristic, patriarchal control. And it just kind of grinds us down. And actually, you know, I think I've talked about this in the past. There is another way of going in terms of Christian theology, which is really the idea that Jesus was talking about confronting that actual system in the here and now. Anyway, I'll not get into too much Christian theology here, but so that's what I was talking about last week, the apocalyptic imagination and the horrors that have been going on in Gaza and the lack of any significant, meaningful, concrete world response, largely because that the United States blocks all efforts, and that is to a large extent because of this. Well, there's many reasons for it, but one of them is this evangelical, hardcore evangelical support for the state of Israel and basically anything that they do. I mean, supporting the state of Israel is fine. I support the existence of the state of Israel under certain conditions, not under the conditions they can do whatever the hell they damn please, because they've got this carte blanche support. So anyway, that's what I was talking about last week. Well, there's also the possibility of a very real apocalypse facing the Earth from climate change and from the complete collapse, biological collapse. Another article I downloaded from yesterday from Common Dreams: humans are less than 1% of life on Earth, but have destroyed half of its plants and more than 80% of all mammals. It is pretty staggering, said the lead researcher of the new study. Understatement. While scientists and conservationists grow increasingly worried about the world's biodiversity, a new study that sought to estimate the biomass of all living creatures on Earth has shed some light on humanity's impact. The planet is largely dominated by plants, which make up 82% of all life on Earth, followed by bacteria at 13%, and the remaining 5% is everything else, including 7.6 billion human beings. According to the study published Monday by the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences of the United States of America, people only make up 0.01% of the Earth's biomass. However, our impact has been massive. The researchers estimate that in terms of biomass, the so-called rise of human civilization has destroyed 83% of wild mammals, 80% of marine animals, 50% of plants, and 15% of fish. Over the relatively short span of human history, the study notes, major innovations such as the domestication of livestock, adoption of an agricultural lifestyle, and the Industrial Revolution have increased the human population dramatically and have had radical ecological effects. Unsustainable human practices and dietary choices have led to a scenario wherein 36% of mammals are human and 60% are livestock, meaning only 44% are wild. It is pretty staggering, Ron Milo, professor of Israel's Weizmann Institute of Science, who led the study, told The Guardian. Our dietary choices have a vast effect on the habitats of animals, plants, and other organisms. And it goes on for a couple more paragraphs. That's that. So, I mean, why bother talking about this stuff? It is, you know, it is kind of paralyzing. What can we do in the face of these massive, massive changes that have only in the past few decades become really visible on a global scale? And, well, I don't know. Are we just going to ride it on through to the bitter end? What forms of resistance have a chance? You know, I've talked about reform versus revolution. The age-old question that's never really been satisfactorily discussed, even let alone answered. You know, I know there's this proposed Portland ballot initiative to tax corporations for green energy projects. I know people are out there collecting signatures from that. I applaud them. That's a good thing. Is it enough? I mean, do we have an understanding of the time scale at which things are advancing? And I'm not just talking about Trump, which has added a terribly unfortunate additional set of obstacles, including the dismantling of the minimal regulatory framework which already existed, and so it goes. But you know, I've tried to over the few years I've been doing the show to grapple with these difficult questions of what is the reality that we're facing, and are the responses that we're engaged in adequate to actually addressing the reality of the situation? So that's a big question. So let me start reading from this Chris Hedges article as I give you the phone number, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. The Coming Collapse by Chris Hedges, May 20th on Truthdig. The Trump administration did not rise prima facie like Venus on a half shell from the sea. Donald Trump is the result of a long process of political, cultural, and social decay. He's a product of our failed democracy. The longer we perpetuate the fiction that we live in a functioning democracy, that Trump and the political mutations around him are somehow an aberrant deviation that can be vanquished in the next election, the more we will hurtle toward tyranny. The problem is not Trump. It is a political system dominated by corporate power and the mandarins of the two major political parties in which we don't count. We will wrest back political control by dismantling the corporate state, and this means massive and sustained civil disobedience, like that demonstrated by teachers around the country this year. If we do not stand up, we will enter a new dark age. The Democratic Party, which helped build our system of inverted totalitarianism, is once again held up by many on the left as the savior. Yet the party steadfastly refuses to address the social inequality that led to the election of Trump and the insurgency by Bernie Sanders. It is deaf, dumb, and blind to the very real economic suffering that plagues over half the country. It will not fight to pay workers a living wage. It will not defy the pharmaceutical and insurance industries to provide Medicare for all. It will not curb the voracious appetite of the military that is disemboweling the country and promoting the prosecution of futile and costly foreign wars. It will not restore our lost civil liberties, including the right to privacy, freedom from government surveillance, and due process. It will not get corporate and dark money out of politics. It will not demilitarize our police and reform a prison system that has 25% of the world's prisoners, although the United States has only 5% of the world's population. It plays to the margins, especially in election seasons, refusing to address substantive political and social problems, and instead focusing on narrow cultural issues like gay rights, abortion, and gun control in our particular species of anti-politics. This is a doomed tactic, but one that is understandable. The leadership of the party, the Clintons, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, Tom Perez, are creations of corporate America. In an open and democratic political process, one not dominated by party elites and corporate money, these people would not hold political power. They know this. They would rather implode the entire system than give up their positions of privilege. And that, I fear, is what will happen. The idea that the Democratic Party is in any way a bulwark against despotism defies the last three decades of its political activity. Is the guarantor of despotism. Trump has tapped into the hatred that huge segments of the American public have for a political and economic system that has betrayed them. He may be inept, degenerate, dishonest, and a narcissist, but he adeptly ridicules the system they despise. His cruel and demeaning taunts directed at government agencies, laws, and the established elites resonate with people for whom these agencies, laws, and elites have become hostile forces. And for many, you see no shift in the political landscape to alleviate their suffering. Trump's cruelty and invective are at least cathartic. Well, that's Chris Hedges. I'd like to just break in and say that I think Hedges gets a lot of it, but I think he really doesn't focus enough on, okay, so yeah, the people who voted, there's all these people who voted for Trump, as he says, have contempt for a political and economic system that has betrayed them. But, you know, when it went for them, it was not a good thing. I mean, this system was built upon, as we should know, massive inequality, massive destruction of people and resources, slavery, expropriation of indigenous land, and all that. And basically the people that now support Trump are caught between a rock and a hard place, obviously. And certainly Trump isn't the way out. And it's going to just end up badly for everybody, hopefully especially for Trump. But anyway, I've got a couple callers. Let's go right to them. Harry, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Barry.
Oh, yeah.
Barry, yeah. Hi. I'm using another phone, but there is some hope. The book Solving 9/11 by Christopher Bolin.
Barry, I'm sorry. We're going to have to cut you off because apparently you've been calling in talking exclusively about this book for a while.
Yes, so it's ever so important.
Barry, sorry, Barry. We're going to have to go on to another caller. Of course, it's important, you know, but 9/11 isn't the whole thing. It is, you know, it's something that, I mean, we could talk about 9/11 if you want. 9/11 was, whether or not it was, actually, whether or not the Bush and Cheney and such colluded directly, you know, is an important question. The fact that it was opportunistically seized upon to basically destroy the latest round of popular movements, the so-called anti-globalization movement, and others, is certainly true. So yes, it's an important piece of modern history. It's not what created the problem that we're facing. It was the latest and long series of shock doctrine type events that continue to keep us down. Anyway, so yeah, it's important to get to the truth of what happened on September 11th, 2001, but it is not the be-all and end-all. So anyway, that's my point. We're talking about other things. We're talking about the climate change and the horrors of the political situation that we find ourselves in. So let's go to our next caller, Camilo. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to say that I agree with you that the Portland Clean Energy Initiative is not enough to deal with the major problems that we have in environment. And I also agree that the situation is dire. However, what you can say about Portland Clean Energy Initiative is that there is a great deal of enthusiasm and concern among people and organizations in this town to do something about it. While what we achieve if the measure gets on the ballot and is passed will probably be minuscule in terms of reducing carbon in the atmosphere, it will be major in impacting communities that have been left out, communities that have been adversely affected by climate change. So
explain for our listeners, I haven't talked about my show, and I don't know how much has been talked about on KBOO. Talk about the mechanics of how that will work.
Okay. So the Portland Clean Energy Initiative will raise a fund, community benefits fund, which will be raised from a 1% surcharge on the business tax of the largest retail corporations in this city, like IKEA, Nike, Wells Fargo, stores that do over $500,000 of retail business in the city and $1 billion nationwide. And it's on retail sales, not on profits. This was chosen because it means that these corporations will not be able to raise prices in Vancouver compared to Portland. They won't be able to move out. These are national corporations. It'll raise approximately $30 million that can be leveraged with funds that are available in the community for the purposes already of weatherization, solarization, job training, and green infrastructure. What this will do is that it will provide an ongoing resource where resources are presently very scarce, and it will empower these communities going forward to make a difference in this this whole city. I think it's an amazing project. It's going to face a lot of opposition at the ballot box from big corporations, and we want you to go to the PortlandCleanEnergyFund.com website, see where you can volunteer to get involved carrying petitions, and that's an urgent requirement. We have to get 40,000 signatures by July 6th, and we need all the help we can get. So please go to the website and get engaged.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that contribution. And I certainly don't want to discourage or disparage any forms of engagement and activism. I definitely don't. That's not my goal. I guess my broader point, I guess, I don't know. Let me just, before we go to our next caller, I'll just make sort of a confession or where I'm coming from anyway. I guess, I kind of came of age as an activist in the mid-80s involved with Earth First, and we were reacting to what was the impending demise of the Northwest natural forest ecosystem, you know, the ancient forest, the climax, Douglas fir forest or redwoods or, you know, wherever, the ponderosa pines east, those are the kind of the climax trees. They were disappearing at an incredibly rapid rate, and there's, 5% or less were left, and that's about probably less than that now. And we're really facing the possibility that those ecosystems were going to completely collapse like they did everywhere pretty much east of here before there was any kind of real consciousness of what those ecosystems actually consisted of, the incredibly complex webs of life that were involved, because there is, because the economic model of the capitalist economic model that, the industrial civilizational model had captured the minds of the people who were in leadership, economic, political, spiritual, in the United States and now around the world. And so there was no, sure, the native people who depended upon them, maybe other people who lived more on the margins, perhaps some of the Thoreau type people who are more sensitive, the poets were aware, early natural scientists had awareness, but by and large, the culture had no awareness of that. And the whole economy, people's livelihoods were based upon ruthless exploitation. And so, the use of lumber for constructing our built environment dictated that our climax forests, our forests were to be sacrificed. And so anyway, there's a growing awareness since the 60s of the forest ecosystems and of the importance, ecological, even spiritual importance, certainly historic importance of these forests. And so that gave rise to a movement, the Ancient Forest Protective Movement. The Earth First is largely focused on forest protection. And something really amazing happened. We actually stopped the cutting of the forests on all the public lands in the Pacific Northwest for, you know, a year or two, while they instituted this political process that led to the Northwest Forest Plan. Anyway, but the feeling I had was that, you know, it was really actually possible to fight the machine, and that really fed into the anti-globalization movement. Earth First had a significant role there as well, in terms of understanding that the same corporations that were destroying the Georgia Pacifics, the Weyerhaeusers, et cetera, that were destroying forests in the United States were also destroying forests in Siberia, in Mexico, in the Amazon, in Borneo, and around the world. And there, you know, the Rainforest Action Network grew out of Earth First and started working with indigenous peoples around the world and others. And there's a kind of a worldwide movement, small but significant, developed where we shared tactics like tree sitting, like doing these tripods where you sit on top of the tripod. And it really felt like, and then that joined forces with the anti-sweatshop movement and other movements opposing the ruthless spread of neoliberal capitalism around the world. And something seemed like it was really happening there in the 90s. And then, 9/11 was had major impact on that movement. So I came out of that. I felt like that the direct action was really getting the goods. We really had, you know, small, I don't want to make any grandiose claims. So that's why I come out of, and I, you know, when I came back to Portland, I saw the, you know, Rising Tide and others involved in the resistance to the fossil fuels, and we've had a lot of victories here in stopping major export facilities and other infrastructure, and we were never separate from other less direct action whatever you want to call it, the directly trying to put yourself on the wheels of the machine. You know, direct action can mean lots of things. It can mean directly going to the electorate by passing ballot initiatives. That's a form of direct democracy. I think this ballot initiative on the green tax here that Camilla was talking about is a form of slightly less direct, but it's a form of more direct democracy, taking it directly to the people. But I think we have, in terms of a sense of urgency and doing what it takes, I'm still looking to see the more kind of widespread, we didn't discount the possibility of things like sabotage at the time. There is a tacit acceptance where, you know, the idea of doing the type of action that the valve turners did last year in turning off the flow of oil directly on the tar sands pipelines, that the necessity defense we used at times fire is burning down a house, you can break a window to go in and save someone in there. Anyway, that's what I would like to see more of, that personally. And I don't say that doing the kind of activism that Camille was talking about prevents anybody from doing the other. I do think that exclusively focusing on ballot initiatives is probably a failing strategy. So, you know, where are the Earth Firsters, I guess? So, okay, with that, I think we have some people waiting patiently here. Is LC still on the line?
Yeah, LJ is right here.
Oh, LJ, go ahead.
How you been?
Pretty good. Yourself?
Hi, pretty good. All right, just a couple of really quick things. I have to tell you how much I am enjoying the reality TV show that's playing out before our very eyes with number 45. I'm practically an American. I love to be titillated, and I am being titillated to the max. All right, and anyway, just a couple of quick things. Crony capitalism and democracy are incompatible.
How about capitalism itself?
Yep, you can. Okay. I'm just modifying a little bit.
Okay.
Okay. You can't have both. It has to be either or either. And the evil imperial empire has already made its choice. They have no compulsions about throwing us under the bus, so the capitalists can increase their fortunes.
Okay. So what do we do about it?
What do we do about
it? Yeah.
Well, all right, here's what we do about it. Remember the Chi activists?
Uh-huh.
Remember when folks in kayaks were out on the river preventing Exxon Mobil from bringing up that monster machine?
Uh-huh, go ahead.
All right. We have to do things like that.
Okay.
We need to do civil disobedience, Paul. Dagnabbit, I really appreciate what Carmelo does. I have worked with him in the past on single-payer health plan for Oregon. And God, Paul, I worked on it with him for 5 years, and we still don't have single-payer health plan in Oregon. And frankly, we never will, all right? So it's got to be. It has to be civil disobedience.
Okay.
It needs to be civil disobedience. Close up your goddamn bank accounts with the corporate capitalist banking system and go to the credit union.
Okay.
Thank you so much for taking my call. Have a good day.
All right. Thanks, LJ. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's just so easy for me to sit behind this microphone. I'm not out there, you know, doing stuff. I wasn't out there in the kayaks. You know, I recognize that it's, you know, it takes sacrifices. It takes, you know, you can't summon up, you know, these kind of movements. It takes a lot of organizing to really get those kind of things together. It took, you know, when I was involved, it took, I know what it takes. When I was more involved, you know, I'd still like to get out there and do some stuff. And I don't know. I guess I'm just feeling, again, that our responses are not quite up to the challenges that we're facing. And am I helping by saying it? I don't know. Let's go to Richard from the Clean Energy Campaign. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, Paul. Good morning. Good morning to all of my fellow Portlanders. Can you hear me?
Yeah. You're on.
All right. So Paul is just listening to everything, and I agree with at most everything that you guys are talking about. We definitely have a failed democratic system, especially nationally, and there's a lot of lack of hope there for us. And even people who have hope in the Democratic Party, I really like the points that you made that that's not even gonna do it for us. So the one thing I can say about our clean energy campaign is that most importantly, we'll set a precedent. We kept Nestle's from bottling our water in Hood River County out of Cascade Locks. We kept fluoride from being used, you know, to help repair pipes in our water, you know, just like as a bandage tactic. And it's small campaigns like that that set a precedent. And hopefully with this clean energy campaign project, it'll bring hope to other communities that are progressive and environmentally conscious around the country, and they will hopefully jump on the same way. So that's the big aim that we're shooting for. So with that being said, I will be, me and a couple other people will be doing a training tonight at 5:30 at Living Plaza.
Sorry, I missed that.
We're going to be doing a signature gathering training tonight at Livicoli Plaza. The address is 6723 Northeast Killingsworth, 97218. And that's from 5:30 to 7 tonight. And anybody who's willing to go out and get some signatures, every signature counts. And you can come on down there today, and we'll be doing some volunteer training.
Right on. Okay, so that's a training for this Portland business tax proposal for the November ballot that people are gathering signatures on. And that's 5:30 to 7 at 6723 Northeast Killingsworth. The Clean Energy Campaign. All right, thanks, Richard. Appreciate it.
Yep.
So this article by Dar Jamail in Extreme Climate Forces, Extreme Measures as Worst Case Predictions Are Realized. This one goes, it's just out on Truth Out. Talks about that, you know, the rapid loss of species. Talks about sea levels rising at an increasingly rapid pace, and projection have already doubled for this century alone, not even to speak of what the next century will bring. The seas are warming as well, with each of the last 5 years having set a new record for the warmest they have ever been since humans have been on the planet. Widespread death of marine life is at a record pace, and we are likely already on the edge of an anoxic event as oceans are depleted of oxygen. Half of all the marine life on the planet has already been lost since just 1970. Already in the sixth mass extinction event Earth has known, this one triggered by humans, we are losing potentially dozens of species every day already. The Great Barrier Reef, the single largest reef system on Earth, has been changed forever, according to scientists who have described the bleaching events that are wiping out the reef as unprecedented and catastrophic. Freshwater from melting glaciers is likely already shifting the circulation of the oceans, causing scientists to warn that one of the worst case predictions about anthropogenic climate disruption could already be happening. The circulation shift will ultimately lead to faster rising seas and superstorms, along with shifting of entire climates for vast swaths of the planet. Bizarre phenomena are already happening to what ice is left in the Arctic, and the sea ice of the Bering Sea never melted out so quickly or early in the season as it did this year. Esteemed 86-year-old social scientist Mayer Hillman recently told The Guardian, humans are doomed due to what we have done to the planet. The outcome is death, and it's the end of most life on the planet because we're so dependent on the burning of fossil fuels. There are no means of reversing the process, which is melting the polar ice caps, and very few appear to be prepared to say so. While people like Hillman and dispatches like this continue to show us how very far along we already are regarding anthropogenic climate disruption, the time to savor our relationship to the planet and each other has never been more pressing than it is right now. We must take this information in if we are to have an accurate map of reality so as to better navigate the time we have left on Earth. Wow. I haven't heard even Dar Jamail talk just like that. I think we're all assimilating well. The few of us like Dar Jamail who are attempting to assimilate vast quantities of dramatic information, the latest information that is happening in real time on planet Earth, because it's not easy. And this is an extreme climate forces extreme measures as worst case predictions are realized. I'll link to this on my website. Our website has had a lot of difficulty, so I didn't do it for my last show. Hopefully I will be able to catch up. Anyway, so looks like we got Bill. Go ahead. You're on the air, Bill.
Hi, Paul. I want to thank you for all you've done and for keeping the faith all these years, staying positive, and that's an excellent practice. You mentioned about what can we do. Well, I believe that we can do a lot individually for ourselves and for others. Personally, I've made the choice to be vegan for the last 18 years. And just cutting back on animal products or going vegetarian or dairy-free or whatever people can do lessons. And maybe it won't save the humanity, but maybe it'll extend our existence here for another week or two, or at least for somebody. We can plant trees and take care of the soil. Soil microorganisms, I believe, are extremely important for the planet and for humans. And they're being eliminated at an alarming rate locally.
Well, how about in terms of collective resistance instead of just individual choices?
Well, we affect others by our individual choices. And yes, collective resistance, whatever we feel called to do, that, you know, this initiative For the clean energy, that sounds like an excellent thing for people to work on. And I applaud people who feel called to do that. But I believe that most people would be like me in that when they make these changes to their lifestyle, living simply, you know, disconnecting from the consumerism, gardening and growing our own food, even though I grow a very small percentage of my food, it's significant emotionally for me. And
but do you accept what Dar Jamil is saying, is that we're basically doomed?
I don't. I think some people, I mean, we might have a 90% wipeout or whatever of humanity, but I don't believe that all of humanity will disappear.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, thank you for calling in. We got 15 minutes left, and we got a couple callers. Yeah, I don't know. I this whole issue of, you know, maybe it's just, maybe I'm just living in the past. I don't know. You know, I've tried to bring up this idea of sort of the demise of Marxism, of sort of Marxist revolutionary attempts to overthrow existing economic systems, political systems, that sort of seems to be a thing of the past, and nothing has really taken its place. The movement of movements, as we called it in the 90s, the anti-globalization movement, seemed to be sort of what was taking the place of that, attempting to address the system systemically. And that sort of fell off. And then there's been really nothing quite to replace that. The enthusiasm about Bernie Sanders did sort of raise more the grassroots sensibility. It seems to have certainly brought more people into the process, which is good. You know, it's brought in a lot more people running for office, which is good here in Portland. You know, it's all to the good. Again, my point is anything that we're doing, even on a conceptual level, up to the challenge of confronting the reality that we're facing? And I'm not saying I've got any answers. I'm just saying I think we need to think about it in those terms, because if it's not, then I don't know, maybe we should just eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we may die. I mean, this is a really serious question. Okay, let's go to Russell. Maybe he's got some answers for us. Hi.
Oh, yes. Listen, you had the other environmentalist on, McPherson, I believe was his last name, who basically was saying the same thing about the planet. And his answer was right living. You remember that? I'm sure you do.
Who's this?
I think his last name was McPherson.
Guy McPherson, yeah. Guy McPherson, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So look what happened at that election in Georgia yesterday. A black woman won the Democratic primary for governor. Now, that's the first time a black person in Dixie South since Reconstruction has been elected to a governorship.
Not elected, has been nominated.
Well,
for
it's the primary. I hear you there. And it's still a struggle. But the point is, consciousness has changed. Not everyone's, but it's changing like a forest fire. And so you just keep witnessing, you keep talking, listening with a patient heart, having some diplomacy. And you know, it's what, the 1880s, radical Reconstruction, isn't that when Marx was doing his thing?
Around that time, yeah.
So we're with the whole synthesis, you know, anti-synthesis, you know, that whole thing.
Uh-huh.
People are shifting, the teachers. So, and if it is, you know, what the governor said, the governor-elect or the primary winner from Georgia, she said, when the unexpected becomes the new truth.
Right on. No, I'm always encouraged by stuff, the good stuff that's happening. I think the, you know, the Burgerville restaurants have voted for a union. There's a third right near where I live, actually up on 82nd Gleason, that is has thrown in to work towards a vote. I think that's great. I think the, you know, what the Democratic Socialists of America are doing in nationally and in Portland, is really exciting. There's people are flocking to that, and I've been seeing people I consider radicals calling for people to throw in with the Democratic Socialists of America. That's encouraging. All these things are good and encouraging.
Yeah, yeah. And the kayakers, people mock them because they're like, well, the boats they're using are made of petrochemicals and all that shit. Well, but that was right in the heart of it. They were right there fighting, and I'm sure the authorities, they had to be, I don't want to say mesmerized, but befuddled by all that. But they finally figured it out, and they hit us back because they got that ship through.
They usually do win, of course, because the system is vast and has vast resources, right, and is able to use all kinds of strategies. But, we'll see how it goes. I'm glad okay. you feel hopeful, and I think...
Just energized. Not even hopeful, but
okay, energized. There you go. We need more energized... Okay. Thank you for calling, Russell. Appreciate that. And 503-231-8187. We've only got a few minutes left. I think we've got Edie still waiting. Go ahead, Edie. You're on the air.
Thank you, Paul. And I agree that on one hand, we need to recognize that it's climate change, habitat destruction, the attacks on democracy are so severe, so fast, and so quickly getting worse and worse. But if we get overwhelmed by that and despair and give up, or we wait until someone is perfect with the one perfect tactic that has perfect results, it's an excuse for the enemy to have us disillusioned and disempowered and divided among ourselves. So instead, I really encourage that we give each other some grace and that we each do the best we can and try to improve by at least 1% every day. Being vegan really does have a profound effect, all of us individually together. And even the little things that we do give us a sense of hope and power and community and connectivity. And through that, then we can the courage and we support each other and have the creativity to find other solutions. And we have to be aware that more and more people are being hurt by evictions, so they dare not. And job loss, so they dare not do the direct action or legality. They cannot do the big mass protests. Their lives and their children's lives, their elder lives, are at risk, but they can talk with each other. They can change what they buy or don't buy. They can work to get these petitions like the Portland Clean Energy Fund out. It's not a tax, according to the judge who oversaw it. It is a 1% surcharge on the business license. And therefore, each person in their own little community, their own connectivity, can reach out bit by bit by bit, doing more, and really being kind to each other, encouraging each other when we otherwise get discouraged, and being humble and pushing ourselves to do even greater when we get smug or lazy. So please press the grace and be aware that not everyone has the privilege, has the power, has the physical abilities, the emotional abilities, or the political safety to do some of the things you say, so that
I want to push back on that, actually, because I think that there's truth to what you're saying, but some of the most inspiring examples in history have actually been people who haven't really had the privilege to be able to take those bold direct actions.
With the surveillance and government control, things are not always the same as it was when the diggers and the factory workers and the slaves and the serfs rebelled. So we've got a diversity of tactics. Let's include the whole community. Let's have love and grace to those that we think it's easy to act like a Trump ourselves and to have contempt and dismiss whole swaths of the population. Listen to them with empathy.
Well, thank you very much for that. You used a word that cannot be used on the air, and so we had to press the button to cut off some of what you said. So I really encourage people to watch their language on the air. Okay, so I don't know if we have any callers. 503-231-8187. We've only got about 5 minutes left on this program. So I'm going to read a little more. This is Dar Jamil, and extreme climate forces extreme measures as worst case predictions are realized. Let's see. The National Interagency Fire Center with the USDA Forest Service has predicted that this year will be a challenging wildfire year across the country. Large portions of the western U.S. are expected to have above average potential for significant wildfire activity this year. They have list a bunch of states, like about 10, 12 states. Not including that list of states was Florida, where by early May, wildfires in Big Cypress National Park had burned more than 38,000 acres, and a fire in the Texas Panhandle had burned more than 30,000 acres. And they say, and then they talk about air. In Pakistan, recent temperatures are reported to have cracked 50.2 degrees Celsius. That's 122.3 degrees Fahrenheit in Nawab Shah, located about 127 miles northeast of Karachi. A regional newspaper there reported that the heat was so intense it caused people to pass out and that business activities came to a halt in a district of 1.1 million people. That area saw a record 45.5 degrees Celsius in March, setting an all-time March record for the entire country. And then it continues. But we've got Max on for the last few minutes here. Go ahead, Max. Hello?
So I found my solution for the future is in the cryptocurrency. There's one, it's called Dash Digital Cash. And yeah, I actually named my son after it because I saw if we all use cryptocurrency, it's like peaceful anarchy.
Really? But don't those Bitcoins, they've actually raised the global energy use like by actually like significant, I don't know if a full percentage point or, but it's very significant amount.
Yeah. But the thing about it is the monetary system is kind of the thing that's the problem. And if we can increase everybody's wealth, like for example, I'm buying a bunch of Dashes right now, and I'll probably have like a couple million dollars in 10 years or five, and then I can fund kind of like whatever you're into.
But what if we don't actually have 10 years? According to what Dar Jamail is saying, is that these things are happening in such rapid time on planet Earth that the idea of like talking about 5, 10, 20 years, that these things are going on now. If we're talking about we need to have done stuff 30 years ago that we didn't do. And so I don't know. I'm very skeptical. I think that what we really need to do is stop using so much energy, so many fossil fuels. And I don't think these cryptocurrencies are going to do anything about it. But anyway, we've got one last quick call. Ross, go ahead. You got the last word.
Hey, I just want to say I agree entirely with your focus on the apocalypse. The question is what to do in this apocalypse. It was about 15 years ago that E.O. Wilson, the great biologist and life scientist, wrote The Future of Life, and he had a whole list of all the animals and the plants that were going into extinction. And he was saying a great irony is that right at the moment all these beautiful things are going extinct, we have this flourishing of intelligence and understanding, so we can finally appreciate life in such great depth. But the truth is things are going bad, and we may as well work with that understanding, not because there's nothing to do, but because this is the real world that we're going to be living in. And so I think that the idea of collective action and individual action, one way to put that together is to see that we could have a kind of a revolution of austerity, because if people live simply, capitalism probably would fall.
Okay.
Anyway,
well, you got the last word. We're plumb out of time. I thank you so much for calling.
Okay,
thank you for everybody else who called. Hope you all enjoyed the show. Stay tuned next week for Laura Finley to talk about school shootings and disturbed young males. Thank you for listening.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Nat Turner Project book release on Thursday, May 24th at 6:30 p.m. at City Hall in Portland. The Nat Turner Project allows artists of color to go beyond the usual initial expositions inherent in presenting art born of marginalized perspectives to a dominant culture, and creates an environment of inclusivity, a communal harbor for artists previously silenced by institutional constraints, and actively provides priority spaces to artists of color. Their first catalog, titled Nat Turner Project Testimony, will be released and celebrated with food, drink, and music. Again, that's the Nat Turner Project book release on Thursday, May 24th at 6:30 p.m. at City Hall, 1221 Southwest 4th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and the certification requirements of the Corporation of Public Broadcasting. Information about the KBOO Community Radio's open meetings policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, unless otherwise noted. The Finance Committee meeting will be held on May 24th at 4:30 p.m. at KBOO.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 9 o'clock, and here's what we've got coming up for the remainder of the morning. First, Peace Talks Radio considers loneliness. Its physical and emotional effects can be lethal. How can people who feel deep loneliness find help? And then at 10 o'clock, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11 o'clock, the Recovery Zone gives voices to the healers among us. And thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. To stay informed and get involved, you can go to kboo.fm. And click on Donate to become a member as soon as the website has settled down and cooperating a little bit. In any case, here we go with Peace Talks Radio, considering loneliness.